And welcome to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. My name is Michelle Boyce, and this is a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. In studio, I've got Lori Ward, who is the local PFLAG rep here in London, Ontario. And on the phone, I have the executive director of PFLAG Canada, Sherry McLeod. Are you there, Sherry?
I'm here. Hi, Michelle. Hi, Lori.
Hi. So we're going to talk about PFLAG, and we're going to talk about sexual orientation, gender identity, and we're going to talk about it across Canada, and mostly we're going to – let's I want to just give people a history of PFLAG, if that's okay, Sherry.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know that you know, you started as an acronym, and you're not an acronym anymore.
It's a little confusing.
You know, it is. But, you know, there aren't too many places on the planet that I can get the President of the United States of America to introduce an agency. So we're gonna do this now and listen to Barack Obama.
So tonight I'm hoping, because of the activism I see in this room, because of the compassion I've seen all across America, and because of the progress we have made throughout our history, including the history of the movement for LGBT equality. And soon after the protests at Stonewall, 40 years ago, the phone rang in the home of a soft-spoken elementary school teacher named Jean Manford. It was 1 a.m, and it was the police. Now, her son, Morty, had been at the Stonewall the night of the raids. Ever since, he had felt within him a new sense of purpose. So when the officer told Jean that her son had been arrested, which was happening often to gay protesters, she was not entirely caught off guard. And then the officer added one more thing. And you know, he's homosexual. Well, that police officer sure was surprised when Jean responded, "Yes, I know. Why are you bothering him?" And not long after, Jean would be marching side by side with her son through the streets of New York. She carried a sign that stated her support. People cheered. Young men and women ran up to her, kissed her, and asked her to talk to their parents. And this gave Jean and Morty an idea. And so after that march, on the anniversary of the Stonewall protests, amidst the violence and the vitriol of a difficult time for our nation, Jean and her husband Jules, two parents who loved their son deeply, formed a group to support other parents, and in turn, to support their children as well. At the first meeting Jean held in 1973, about 20 people showed up. But slowly, interest grew. Morty's life, tragically, was cut short by AIDS, but the cause endured. And today, the organization they founded for parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays has more than 200,000 members and supporters. Made a difference for countless families across America. And Jean would later say, "I considered myself such a traditional person. I didn't even cross the street against the light. But I wasn't going to let anybody walk over Morty." That's the story of America. Of ordinary citizens organizing, agitating, and advocating for change. Of hope stronger than hate. Of love more powerful than any insult or injury. Of Americans fighting to build for themselves and their families a nation in which no one is a second-class citizen, in which no one is denied their basic rights, in which all of us are free to live and love as we see fit. And tonight, somewhere in America, a young person Tonight, somewhere in America, a young person, let's say a young man, will struggle to fall to sleep, wrestling alone with a secret he's held as long as he can remember. And soon, perhaps, he will decide it's time to let that secret out. What happens next depends on him, his family, as well as his friends and his teachers and his community, but it also depends on us, on the kind of society we engender, the kind of future we build. I believe the future is bright for that young person. For a while, there will be setbacks and bumps along the road. The truth is that our common ideals are a force far stronger than any division that some might sow. And these ideals, when voiced by generations of citizens, are what made it possible for me to stand here today. These ideals are what made it possible for the people in this room to live freely and openly, when for most of history that would have been inconceivable. That's the promise of America, HRC. That's the promise we're called to fulfill. Day by day, law by law, changing mind by mind. That is the promise we are fulfilling. Thank you for the work you're doing. God bless you. God bless America.
And there we have it. So...
That's such a great clip.
You know, it is. And I don't get to play him very often when I'm introducing my guests.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. You want to know how we got it all started in Canada?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, if you follow the gay rights movement, following the decriminalization of homosexuality in 69, that gave birth to a number of groups that were formed to provide support to gay men. And I don't believe there were any lesbian support groups at the time, but specifically it was for gay men. And as the pride parades began to come forward, you know, namely in Toronto, I don't recall when it was in Montreal, but or Vancouver, but the parade then gave birth to a new type of support group, one that focused on the needs of parents. And so PFI Canada got its start as a group called POG, Parents of Gays, which was organized by the Reverend Brent Hawk out of the Metropolitan Community Church in Toronto. Now, members of that group went forward and they started other groups. And at the time in Southern Ontario, a number of groups were emerging and focusing on family support or support for families. Now, a lot of these groups were not able to gain a proper anchoring in the community, but key members continued with that same idea, that same energy, and eventually they found one another. And by 1985, the first chapter of PFI Canada was opened in Brampton. And at the time, we identified with the acronym Parents, Friends, and Families of Lesbians and Gays. Now, the group in Ontario, or the group in Brampton, they had a real keen sense of how to spread the message, and they got some early media support from Chatelaine's and other publications, and so the idea spread like wildfire right across the country. I'm speaking specifically of the founders, Mary and Lori, as in Lawrence Jones, and they have two gay children and very proud of their children and wanted, you know, to make sure their kids had a better world, as so many of our PFI parents believe in and feel. And the Jones, they took this message on the road and helped open many groups across the country. And by the time the early 2000s rolled around, PFI Toronto specifically, they led the charge with spearheading a national office for this growing movement. They began holding meetings. They had an anonymous funder who was keen to support the foundation of a national office. And, you know, from there, we brought people together and had the discussions we needed to have. And in 2004, PFI Canada was incorporated. So there you have it. I should add that along the way, we found that other groups were coming forward and very much in need of recognition, like people who identify as bisexual, people who identify as transgender and transsexual and intersect and two-spirit and queer and questioning. And for a while, PFI Canada recognized something of an alphabet soup diversity, you know, community. But going forward in 2004, 2005, we really became an organization that just supports all people with questions or concerns around sexual orientation and gender identity issues. And that's who we are today. The acronym is not something that we use. It's part of our history. It's certainly part of our heritage and connects us to the worldwide movement that is PFLAG. But we're an organization that welcomes all people.
Wonderful. And it's important to know, you know, that PFLAG, you know, started with the roots that it started with. And you know, it's like so many other acronyms. I mean, EGAL used to be an acronym, and now they're not. And, you know, now we just know it as PFLAG. And, you know, the wonderful supportive place that it is for people who have no other place to go. So that's awesome. So how big is PFLAG Canada now?
Well, currently we are 77 chapters and contacts across Canada. A chapter group is a group that meets on a monthly basis. They organize monthly support group meetings. A contact is a person who gives email and telephone support in the community. So we have 77 local affiliates across Canada, plus the national office. The national office also receives support calls through our toll-free line, and we provide email support. And as well, we provide, and this is what we were established for, the purpose of supporting our chapters and contacts in their work. And as well, we run national programs like a youth poster campaign. We have a stories campaign currently running, and we have a number of other initiatives as well.
Great. And can you give us that 800 number?
Yeah, absolutely. It's 1-888-530-6777. Now, for people who wish to focus on gender identity support, we have another number. It's 1-888-822-9494. Now, I should say these numbers currently do not run 24/7. We are working on an initiative to provide 24/7 access to everyone across Canada who wishes to reach out to PFLAG Canada. It's in the works. We're hopeful it will come about in 2012. But these numbers are basically numbers that are there. They don't have set hours. They are volunteer answered, and so it's as people are available.
Wonderful. And, you know, we're going to talk about some difficult subjects in this show. I'm sure difficult things will come up and people may get triggered or anything else. And there is one other number, and that is 519-765-5000. And that number is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year for support and crisis. And that's not PFLAG's number, but that's Alphabet's London number here. So if you do run into difficulties during the show or any other time in your life, there's lots of support out there, so reach out and get that support as you can. So PFLAG, I mean, why? Why have PFLAG?
Why have PFLAG? Oh, that's such a great question. Well, we got our start, you know, for great reason. Parents needed support. There was a recognition that it was not only about the individual person. We are all connected to one another. We are all part of each other's story. And so it's not merely about telling a person that they are okay. It's about ensuring that the relationships that are most important to us, most vital for our vitality in life, are protected. And why PFLAG? Because we basically recognized that very early in and started to provide support for those key relationships. Now, as you know the history of PFLAG Canada going forward, we became an organization that supports all Canadians. Well, the reason for that is we recognize that it's not just about how you feel about yourself and about how your parents and family members feel about you. It's we're all part of this wider community. And if people are to come into this world and give back their greatest gifts, they have to feel that they are welcome, that they are supported, that they belong, that it's okay to be who they are. And so PFLAG Canada became this organization that not only supports the individual, not only supports the people who are connected through key relationships to that individual, we are the organization that supports all of society in its evolution forward down this path around welcoming and accepting and understanding diversity.
Can you tell me about the Personal Stories campaign? And we've got a bunch of them here, and we're going to play them throughout the show for people because they're absolutely amazing and we can listen to people's stories. But can you tell us some background on that?
Absolutely. The campaign got its start through one of our key members, Mark Childs. He was a member of our board, and he chaired our marketing committee at the time. He was involved with the National Advertising Awards, which is an industry awards program that recognizes, top and agencies and corporations. And the National Advertising Awards saw it fit last year to introduce a philanthropic category for the first time, which was absolutely wonderful. And so we prepared a brief basically about KeyFly Canada and about some of our key messages. And the National Advertising Awards put it out there so that all designers and agencies and corporations could submit ideas for consideration for this awards program. And the winners get to go to Cannes in France, and it's a big thing. So there's great incentive for agencies working at the highest level to get involved. From this competition, some really great ideas came forward, and one of them was the Stories campaign. And one of the things that was recognized in this process was that PFLAG Canada is all about connected stories. And this goes to the heart of what I was sharing earlier about it not just being the individual, that we are all about these key support relationships in our lives. Draft FCB was the agency that took the category with this idea, and they developed this campaign, and if you go on the Stories site, it's stories.pflagcanada.ca, you will see a number of people who have come forward to share their stories, and some of them are connected to other people that are also sharing their stories, and the campaign runs through the technology of QR codes. Now, QR codes is something of an emerging media hook. Now, it's more popular in Europe simply because it runs through smartphones, and cell phone time, airtime in Europe is considerably cheaper than in Canada, but it is catching on in Canada as well. And if anyone doesn't know what QR codes are, you're seeing them in a lot of print media these days, in magazines, sometimes even in newspapers, but on posters as well. They're the squares that have all of the squiggly lines, and there might be an indicator to scan it with your smartphone. And basically, this is like a UPC label, but for smartphones. So a phone can scan it, and then it will be taken to a website or a link or a video. And in our case, with our Stories campaign, it links a person to the video that is connected to whatever print media they're reading the code, where they're reading the code. And anyway, it's very popular. We've gotten lots of hits with respect to the video stories. One of the things we're promoting right now is that anyone can become part of this campaign. This is not a campaign that sits in isolation. It's intended to be organic. It's intended for people to share their stories and connect their stories to that of their friends and their loved ones who would also like to share their stories. And so we can initiate this global dialogue around what it's like to come out, what it's like to have a friend come out, what it's like to struggle to just be who you are, to live an authentic life. And so that is the angle we're after, and there you have it.
Well, let's listen to one of these. This is
sure.
This is Terry's story.
I had my daughter a number of years ago. She's 12 now, so 12 years ago. It wasn't really the norm as much as it is now. Michelle is the birth mother. They said, if you do this, you can be just the donor and you can be Uncle Terry and, or not even be involved in any way, shape, or form, or you can be fully involved. And there's no way I could have done it without being involved. I had to know who my child was going to be. I was very, very, very close to my mother as a kid growing up. We were, inseparable. So when I called her to tell her that she was going to have a grandkid, it was pretty quiet at first. And I've just finally said, you're you're being odd about this. I want to know, like, do you want nothing to do with this? And she said, no, I don't. It's not really your kid, and I could never love it. At this point, I haven't talked to my mother in about 12 years, you know, by her choice. But a lot of times I think about having that supportive mother role in my life, and I do miss that, and it's painful not having that. And I would like to make sure that my new family with my daughter is not so complex. My life today is pretty awesome. I've got an amazing, amazing 12-year-old daughter. She's a love of my life. This is who I am, and I love who I am, and I'm really happy with the way I am. My name is Terry, and I'm a very happy gay male.
Those very common issues that we deal with when supporting the alphabet soup, and that is when parents abandon their children.
Yeah, it was very sad for Terry. He had been out, and you know, his mom was supportive, and the key issue here was that he was helping friends to have a child.
You wonder what goes through some parents' head when they abandon their children over these things.
You do. And, you know, to be honest, Michelle, it was something that as somebody involved with PFLAG Canada, I personally really struggled with this for a long time. And a good friend of mine who, you know, is gay and a social worker said to me one day, and at the time we were talking about how wonderfully insular we see certain ethnic communities, you know, how they protect their own and how they look after one another. And this friend of mine is French-Acadian, and we were talking about this wonderful, rich support that he experiences in his family. And he said to me, you know, Sherry, it was a learning moment for me. He said, it's important to understand that when a parent of somebody who comes out, when that parent takes that child and holds them close and embraces them and says, I love you no matter what, that, yes, we see that as love, and that's easy to see as love. But when a parent goes the opposite direction, they often think that they're doing the right thing by choosing tough love to prepare their child for this world. And although we don't like it, it doesn't feel right to us, it is the behavior that they have learned as the demonstration of love. And for me, with respect to how I came to be part of PFLAG Canada, which is probably not the traditional route, it was through a family rejection story where I was not at the heart of it, but very much a keen witness of it. You know, for me, this was a lesson that I really needed. And so I've always been grateful for this friend who's shared this insight with me.
Yeah, tough love is hard, and
it's hard.
You know, and we see it a lot in trans communities, especially where you know, parents feel that if they withdraw their love, that, you know, their child will see the sense and you know, and change back in some ways. And it never works.
It never works, and it you know, I always felt a great deal of compassion for parents that just couldn't accept, because I could see what they were missing out on. But this was another layer that I really needed. It never works, but that's where they are. That's the best that they can do. And you know, as an organization that says it's supporting everyone, that has a mandate to support everyone, we have to get behind that and say, you know, that's okay. Let us help you work through that. Let us help you grow so that you can move forward with your family.
Exactly. So Lori is patiently sitting here in studio across from me, nodding and cheerfully following along. So Lori, did you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Lori Ward, and I am the chapter leader for the PFLAG group here in London, Ontario. We meet the third Monday of every month at 186 King Street at 7 o'clock. We have all individuals come, people questioning their sexual identity and their orientation, family, friends, anyone that is struggling and needs a safe space where they can connect with other individuals in the same situation.
Wonderful. And how did you get involved with PFLAG?
Well, 2 years ago, my daughter came out. And it was a shock to me, to say the least, because as a mom, I'm very connected to all three of my children, but I noticed there was a difference between me and my youngest child. And I wasn't sure what it was, and one day I just had to ask, you know, what's going on with you, and why am I not connected to you like I am to your brother and sister? And so my daughter, Hannah, just said, "Do you really want to know, Mom?" And I said, "I sure do." And she said, "Well, I'm dating someone." And I said, "Okay." And who she was dating happened to be a girl. And needless to say, we were driving down one of the busiest streets in London, Ontario, and I nearly crashed the car and had to pull over. And I was shocked. I was shocked because I could not believe that I did not know or even have a hint that my daughter had been struggling with this. For 2 years, she sat quiet, looking on the internet for something to tell her that she actually wasn't a lesbian, that she was a heterosexual female with different thoughts. And you know what? In the end, there was nothing for her because Hannah is gay and we support her, but I needed support, so I reached out to PFLAG. I had heard about PFLAG, and I made the phone calls I needed to because of the 1-800 number. And I did speak to Sherry, and I also spoke to Joanne, who is the other lady that runs the chapter here with me. And they really helped me, and they really helped our family, and so I became involved because I didn't have any other choice.
Oh, we call that the pay it forward approach.
Yes, exactly.
It's a calling.
Yeah, I mean, I have two wonderful ladies sitting in my production booth paying it forward too. so we believe in the concept. So Sherry, you know, this isn't all that different of a story, is it?
No, it's a very common story, and you know, we hear this quite often, that parents are completely shocked. And shocked in the sense that it has nothing to do with their level of acceptance. They just don't see it coming. When your child is, you know, developing and becoming all in front of you all of the time, you don't necessarily pick up on the cues. And sometimes there just aren't any cues.
Exactly. Well, we're going to talk more about this with Lori and Sherry after the break. This is Michelle Boyce on Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. We'll be back in a few short minutes.
We are all in this together, brothers and sisters. We can do better.
And welcome back to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. My name is Michelle Boyce, and I have two wonderful people with me today. I have Lori Ward, who is one of the two hosts of PFLAG London, Ontario. And I have the executive director on the phone, Sherry McLeod. How are you doing, Sherry?
Just great, Michelle.
Okay.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So we've been talking about personal stories, and Lori was just telling us her personal story, but we haven't heard Sherry's. What got Sherry involved with PFLAG?
Would be delighted to share it with you. Just a little bit about myself. I come from a marketing background and small business management background. My degree is from Ryerson Radio and Television Arts. So at the time when PFLAG came into my life, I was a stay-at-home mom. My son was 4 years old, and I was looking to what my options might be when he went off to kindergarten. And so I started writing a book. I had noticed a lot of my classmates were publishing from Ryerson, and I looked upon what they were doing with great admiration and thought, you know, I'd like to give that a shot. And I worked for about 6 months on the book, and I had a keen interest in hospice care. and was taking courses there. That was going to be my volunteer outlet. Now, at the time, I had a cousin and a gay man. He was dealing with cancer. Now, he was somebody who came out to his parents at a time when his partner was dying of AIDS. And so it was a traumatic, traumatic time. And unfortunately, he did not get the support that he needed from his parents. Now, this cousin, Robin, he was very, very dear to me in my life. He lived with us for a short period while he was preparing for university. And, you know, older than I was and very much a mentor to me. He was honestly the person that I thought made me feel like I was not adopted, because growing up until I was 11 or 12, I genuinely believed that I was just very different from my family members and I must be adopted. And then Robin came along and I thought, hey, maybe I'm not adopted. So when Robin came out, it was later in life, and our first thought, or at least my first thought, was, oh, thank God he's had relationships, because until that point, we just thought he had been a single person his entire life, because he didn't talk about his relationships, and we just felt that here was this wonderful, wonderful, giving young man who really needed, you know, to share that with somebody. Why should he go through life all by himself? And we didn't get the feeling that that was his choice. So when he came out, it was, oh, thank God. And the second thought was, oh, no, here his partner is dying of AIDS, and how sad is that? The issue around acceptance for my family and my parents and my siblings, it was a non-issue. It wasn't even a discussion. But for his family, it was certainly a big discussion, and his parents just could not come to embrace that, and it was an important thing, especially where he was going through such a difficult time. So the years progressed, and there was no discussion with his parents, and it is said that when children come out, sometimes parents go into the closet, and that's essentially what happened in our family. My aunt and uncle just isolated themselves. My parents, who had an open line with them up until that time, we just didn't see them or hear from them. My cousin's ashes came to my family. We held a private funeral, and along with my cousin's partner, there was a committal service. I just felt that all these years we had hoped that there would be reconciliation. Of course, when my cousin died, that was gone. There was no hope at that point. And for me, what I was left with more than anything was this recognition that his parents were victims, as well as he, of course. But the whole family was just a mess afterwards. And his parents would never have an opportunity now to make it right. And it was just this recognition that there are so many faces to homophobia, to prejudice, to transphobia, that for me, I felt very strongly compelled that his story needed to be told, that something had to be done, that same calling that we see in so many of our volunteers and our parents and our people who come forward and get involved with PFLAG Canada, because they just need to change the world. That was very alive in me and still is very alive in me. And that's what led me to my first chapter meeting. And I was a mess. I was grieving. I didn't know if I belonged. I was very much that the face of, you know, is PFLAG for me, which, you know, so many people come to PFLAG thinking, do I belong here? And so in my first chapter meeting, I just sat there and listened and really couldn't speak, because I was full of grief. I couldn't even get the words out. But by the time I hit my fifth meeting, I was moving through in a very different way than most of the people that were there, you know, on a month-to-month basis. And then my marketing skills and business skills started to kick in, and I approached the chapter leader and I said, you don't really know who I am. And he looked at me rather oddly, and I said, there might be some things that I could do to help here. And from there, we launched a community education committee. We wrote a curriculum for introducing issues around sexual orientation, gender identity at the middle school level, which here is grades 5 through 8. But, you know, we wrote a program that was sort of in line with what was being introduced with the human development program already at the school level, and had wonderful support from the school district here and teachers, and we went forward from there. Now, you know, it wasn't before too long, maybe 6-8 months from that, that PFLAG Canada approached me and asked if I would like to get involved with the national organization and do some education at that level. So that's my story.
Yeah, I'd like to back up a little bit, Sherry, and talk a little bit about the parents going back in the closet. I think that we all do that. I think that we need that moment of grieving and coming to terms and trying to wrap our heads around the news we have just heard. And I think we go through our own coming out process.
I couldn't agree more.
Yes, I think that for some of us, for me, I cried for 3 solid days.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because I didn't accept who Hannah was and is. It was because it was anything that I had pictured for her was changed. What I thought was not exactly how it was going to play out. And so I had to grieve and come to terms with that feeling and slowly come out of the closet to the point now where I as well run the meetings for, what I thought I would be doing. If you'd asked me this, you know, 5 years ago, I'd be like, yeah, not going to do anything like that. And then here I am along with other parents.
Yeah, you never know where we're going to end up.
No.
You know, if 20 years ago you told me I was going to be a radio host for human rights issues, I would have told you, you know, you're out to lunch at that point in time. I was the head of a multi-million dollar corporation. So yeah. And, you know, that many faces thing that you talked about, right? The many faces of the community. And there's no one way that we can ever, you know, write a book about how to come out. There's no guidelines, there's no right way, there's no wrong way. You know, there's so many different stories out there.
There really are, and having been involved as long as I have, and just to bounce off Lori's comment, I mean, you're so right, Lori. It's a coming out process for parents too, because your identity changes, your vision changes, your sense of self changes, your goals for your parenting goals. You know, what you hope to accomplish as a parent over the course of your child's formative years, all of that shifts around and almost, you know, comes into question. What I have noticed with the coming out stories of both people who are coming out as LGBTQ and parents is that it's all about checkpoints within their own identity and reflecting that forward and what does it mean. So it's, what is this to me? And then what is this to my life? And people have to go back and forth, that period of recognizing that those anchor points for themselves and their identity, and then projecting it forward and seeing what it comes back. And when I say projecting it forward, that means a lot of different things. For some people, that's a mental process. Other people, it's an emotional process. In the case of the trans community, of course, we know it's very much a physical process. And so people go forward in whatever coming out process they're in through that, through those checkpoints, through that reflecting, through that introspection, and eventually they decide it's time. It's all about knowing thyself, and they decide it's time. One of the things that really struck me when I got involved with this community was just how far ahead LGBT youth were with respect to knowing who they were. I mean, for me, I was someone who was in my early 30s, mid-30s, and seeing the level of maturity on that element, that aspect of knowing oneself, just astounded me, because people who were teenagers were dealing with that level of awareness and maturity that was, I would say, comparable to what I was seeing in my peer community of people in their early 30s. It was very surprising.
Yeah.
But it was because people had to do that work. They had to do that internal work. And they really had to think about who they were and what they were going to do in order to live an authentic life. You know, for people who are not challenged around these issues personally, you know, these are things we tend to deal with, you know, in our late 20s, 30s, sometimes even into our 40s and 50s.
Exactly. And I mean, I did these workshops for 4 years in Toronto with a group called Teach, which is Teens Educating and Confronting Homophobia. And quite often I would go into a high school and start talking about sexual orientation with a group of grade 9 kids, and they're like, yeah, we get it. What's your issue?
Mm-hmm.
You know, more often than not. And you know, and that's the way the youth are taking on these issues, in on the most part, with you know, the LGB side of it. The T side, not so warm and fuzzy in school still. But we're getting there. But, you know, parents and queer people themselves, they're not the only ones that come out. You know, so often political leaders also have that coming out process.
Mm-hmm.
where you know, the Secretary of the UN, he's had his speech this week where he talked about sexual orientation to the Human Rights Council. I mean, for those that remember, back in 2006 when he came in power, he was not an ally of the sexual orientation community at all. He, you know, we were protesting his speeches back in 2006 because he was silencing the queer community. And then all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, but, you know, 6 years later, you know, he's come out as a huge ally. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's remarkable progress to see, you know, international leaders, you know, going through that process and coming out supportive. And it's important. And I actually have that clip from him now.
I'm pleased to address this historic Human Rights Council session. Some say that sexual orientation and gender identity is a sensitive subject. I understand. Like many of my generation, I did not grow up talking about these issues. But I learned to speak out because lives are at stake, and because it is our duty under the United Nations Charter and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights to protect the rights of everyone everywhere. The High Commissioner's report documents disturbing abuses in all regions, with a pattern of violence and discrimination directed at people just because they are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. There is a widespread bias at jobs, schools, and hospitals, and appalling violent attacks, including sexual assault. People have been imprisoned, tortured, even killed. This is a monumental tragedy for those affected, and a stain on our collective conscience. It is also a violation of international law. You, as members of the Human Rights Council, must respond. To those who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, let me say, you are not alone. Your struggle for an end to violence and discrimination is a shared struggle. Any attack on you is an attack on the universal values the United Nations and I have sworn to defend and uphold. Today, I stand with you, and I call upon all countries and people to stand with you too. A historic shift is on the way. More states see the gravity of the problem. I firmly oppose conditionality on aid. We need constructive actions. The High Commissioner's report points the way. We must tackle the violence, decriminalize consensual same-sex relationships, ban discrimination, and educate the public. We also need regular reporting to verify that violations are genuinely being addressed. I count on this council and all people of conscience to make this happen. The time has come.
I got warm fuzzies when I heard that speech.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been, I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years, fighting the fight. And, you know, some people, you know, out there in our listening audience have been fighting for even longer than I have. And you know, to see and hear these world leaders coming out, you know, the President of the United States actually even saying the word gay. It's not something that I'm anticipating, you know, our Prime Minister spitting out of his mouth in any time soon. But how does that make you feel?
I feel great. I'm really happy because a friend of mine, when Hannah came out, a friend of mine said, you understand now, Lori, you are part of the LGBT community, because anything against the community is it's you. It affects you. It affects you and your family. So to hear a world leader speak, he kind of summed up what exactly is happening at our ground roots level here.
Yeah.
Or we're trying.
We're trying. Yeah. Sherry, I mean, we're working hard and, you know, we're actually getting there.
We are. And one of the things about political leaders coming out is recognizing that you're not just working with an individual, but you're working with that person's brand. And once you're out as a political leader, there's no going back in. And the brand quite often is set so that he is going to be, or she is going to be, as well accepted as they possibly can for re-election purposes. So when you see a leader coming out, especially a leader that has in the past positioned themselves as being, you know, against the community in some way, you know that it's not just about personal growth, that this person has the courage to take the step forward and also grow their label, their personal brand of politics. And that, to me, says, you know, either the public is in a place where we're ready for that as a society, or this person just genuinely has the courage to take society forward. So it's very encouraging.
Yes, brave.
It is, and I wish it wasn't brave.
I know. I know. How wonderful that would be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, step by step, we're getting there. It's like the youth. When you think about, you know, when the youth are the deciding class of people in, let's say, you know, 30 years, I hope that they maintain that spirit of, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. Everyone deserves respect. Everyone should be accepted as a citizen of planet Earth. You know, we don't have to, you know, separate people by identity or who they love or what their gender is or what they want to wear or any of that silliness. I'm hoping that they maintain that they claim it as, you know, their brand of who they are going to be in society, and they don't lose it.
Exactly. And when we talk about those stories, let's listen to Jennifer's story.
I raised a daughter and now I have a son. What happened was my daughter sent me an email telling me that she was going to have surgery to become a male. I wasn't prepared for the trans part, the girl to boy. I wasn't really familiar with that concept. He lives male, but it's confusing for me. And he says it's confusing for him as well. He lives male, but he isn't intending to become fully male. I called my daughter, used the phone, and got her voicemail, and the voice that picked up was male. And it was my daughter, but it was a male voice. And at that time, I realized I would never hear my daughter's voice again, that my daughter was gone. I knew that my child was very much an outcast. That was my feeling. Didn't have a lot of friends, didn't fit in. But she was so unhappy, and I didn't know what to do to make it right. So it eases the worry that I have for my child to know that he's happier, still struggling, but doing well. As parents, we have to learn to love and accept our children for who they want to become. I am very happy and very proud of my family. My name is Jennifer, and I am the mother of a trans-identified young person.
You know, these things that parents go through, they're hard.
They are. They are very hard.
You know, and she talks about, you know, the death of her daughter and you know, the fact that she'll never hear her daughter again. And you know, quite often when I'm working families through these coming out processes, I actually encourage them to have a funeral and to actually go through the grieving process and come out the other end, you know, a whole and bonded family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people that say, you know, they should just get it, and they should get it faster, you know, it just doesn't always work that way.
It does. We're not light switches, you know. We can't just sort of be flipped on or off or just relocated to a new track in life. We sort of have to grow into those changes, those transitions, and claim them as our own before we can sort of lead the trail along those new paths. It's so challenging.
It's super challenging. And Laura, you went through that with your family. And
absolutely, we did. But at the bottom of it all, we all love one another. And I think that after coming to terms with the fact that I no longer had what I thought was a straight daughter, you just grow and go. And truthfully, nothing really changed in our family. We still do the same things. We have the same great times and the same sad times as we did before Hannah came out. And it's fine. It's good. Everything is working the way it should work. And as a proud PFLAG mom, I think my life is fuller and richer because of my daughter. If you had said I would know a transgender person and consider them my friend 2 years ago, I would have been stunned, because I would never have thought that I would, but I have. I've got a better life because of it. And so to me, having a lesbian daughter is a gift to our family, and we all feel that way. So it does get better to all the parents out there, and go through the process. You're allowed to take the time to formulate in your head and come to an understanding of what you've just been told. But In time, it will get better, and you'll function as you always did. At least that's our experience as a family.
Absolutely. And that's what we're hearing from so many families, that, you know, initial reactions, that they are what they are, but they're not always set in stone with respect to how things move forward.
No.
I just know so many families that parents will say, you know, I didn't say what I wanted to say. I wasn't prepared for the, you know, the news, and so I just reacted. And you want to know something? I will confess, I'm one of those parents. It was after I was executive director of PFLAG Canada, my own daughter came out to me, and she hit me in the hallway. Mm-hmm. It was midnight. I had a basket of laundry on my hip, and she said, "I have something to tell you," and you know, my reaction was very, oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations. Thank you for telling me. Are you okay? Doing the checklist in my head. And it was over and done within about 2 minutes. And she looked at me wide-eyed and stared at me, and she said, that's it? You've done your checklist, and you accept me and still love me, and I'm okay, and that's it? And it was only then that I realized that, you know, the time, taking the time was so vital. And, of course, she knew she would be loved and accepted because of the fact that I do the work that I do, and because, you know, in our family, it's anything you are is fine with us kind of, you know, mantra. We preach it all the time. But we then sat down, and we were a good hour going through, you know, how she came to this understanding and what were the key turning points. And time is so important. You know, take it, you know that you need it, and, you know, move forward together.
Wonderful. And like always on this show, we could talk for hours, but our time has come to a close. And you know, Sherry, can you give us contact information and website again?
Absolutely. PFI Canada toll-free support. It's 1-888-530-6777. For the gender identity support line, it's 1-888-822-9494. And the PFLY Canada website, where all of this information can be found, is PFLY Canada, PFLAGCanada.ca.
And Laurie?
We're on Facebook, PFLAG London. And we meet on the third Monday of every month at 186 King Street at 7 p.m.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both for coming out and talking to me about this stuff. And if people want more information, please get in contact with Sherry or Lori. And if you're out there in the world and you need help, make sure that you call those numbers and, you know, get the support that you need, because we're all out there rooting for you. And if you need or you want to listen to this show and other shows, you can catch our blogs at www.betweenthemargins.ca and listen to all of the wonderful pieces out there. And you have yourself a happily ever after, whatever that means to you. Have a great day.